Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. This is Nick Wright. Chris Broussard is joining us this morning. We are down here in Miami for Super Bowl week. We came here to talk football, but in life, sometimes plans change, and unfortunately, today is one of those days. We are continuing to process the news of Kobe Bryant's death. His reach so much farther than just basketball. As a father and husband and NBA legend and Oscar winner, so much more. Nick, I know this was hard on you. It was hard on every sports fan. How are you processing all of it this morning now that you've had a second to let it sink in?
Yeah, I think processing is the right word, and I don't think it's sunk in. This is the first one of these for me as far as, unlike Broussard, I had no personal relationship with Kobe Bryant. And I've never had a celebrity death that registered with me the way I know so many have with other people. I remembered the outpouring when Michael Jackson passed, and I'll be totally candid, I didn't understand it. I understood people appreciated his music and appreciated his career, but I didn't understand the grief people were feeling, and now I do. I am still in a stage of disbelief, Chris. When the news came across my Twitter feed, as I think with so many people, I said, well, it can't be right. And then as the news seemingly only got sadder and sadder, and it was confirmed, and then we also know his 13-year-old daughter passed away along with seven other people, I don't even know how to wrap my arms around it. And I am in true shock that Kobe Bryant, 1978 to 2020, that we are not going to see Kobe Bryant sitting courtside at Laker games when he's old and gray, and that we're not going to get to see this next phase of his life that he seemed to be so excitedly embracing over the last few years of his retirement.
Yeah, like everyone, I mean, I was in shock. I was actually in the air when I found out. I was flying to Chicago and then en route to here. And somebody had texted me, OMG. And I shot back a question mark and they said, Kobe died. And I was like, this can't be Kobe Bryant. And I text Kobe Bryant question mark. And they said, yeah. And I began seeing other stuff because we were about to land in the news. And it was like a gut punch. And as you said, Nick, I mean, I've seen tragedies. I was a very little kid when Roberto Clemente died of a plane crash. Thurman Munson, I was older and could understand when he died with the Yankees. Magic Johnson, when he came down, got HIV.
People thought he was going to die in short order.
And Roy Halladay, even more recently, the great pitcher. But I haven't experienced anything like this in the world of sports in my lifetime. This is the most tragic for me that I've ever seen. And there are a lot of reasons to be devastated. But one was that Kobe had transitioned so smoothly to life after basketball, which surprised me because he has such tunnel vision as a player that I actually was one that thought he might have trouble transitioning because basketball was so much a part of his life and really was his life. But I haven't seen a transition this smooth.
Better.
Business venture. He's a venture capitalist. Won an Oscar, you know, for his movie Dear Basketball. Best-selling author for the Mamba Mentality book. And a family man, a tremendous family man. That's why we didn't see him at as many Laker games because he was spending time coaching his kids. Ironically, the last time I saw him was about a year ago at the mall in Newport Beach, where he lived, and he was with his family. And we spoke for about 10 minutes. He seemed so comfortable and so just comfortable in life after basketball. And so that's one of the reasons of many that is most devastating to me.
Well, Jenna, what Broussard talked about right there was my immediate reaction once you start to process it is there are certain guys who you really do worry about once their career is over. No matter how much money or fame or accolades they have, what will they do? And will they always be trying to reclaim their athletic fame? And I would have thought Kobe was going to be tops on that list because he was such an amazing competitor. And he seemed to have just an almost animalistic need to compete, to defeat you, to have there be some scoreboard that he was on the top of. But instead, he went a totally different way. He totally threw himself into, it would appear, the things he maybe always had a passion for, but deprived himself of because he was so focused on singular greatness as a basketball player. And so he gets into films. He's always reading a different book. And he gets his sports fix through his daughters. And that's the part that, for everyone, to me, is so jarring about it. And it makes you, honestly, reconsider all your decisions. It makes you, like, all of us, spend time away from our families for a career we're very focused on. You know, Broussard, if I may, you know, you're bi-coastal. Right. And I spent a year and a half living in a different city than my wife and kids and going back and forth. And it makes you just think, like, you know, does any of it matter other than the things that actually matter? And Kobe was finally getting to do the things for him
that actually matter.
And to have that stripped from him, and selfishly for all of us to lose getting to see what the next 50 years of a savant, a brilliant person that was trilingual, person that could show the ability to get to the top of multiple fields, what he would have done, the things he was already trying to do for women's basketball, it is a tragedy unlike I can remember in the sports world in my lifetime.
So for me, I was at another network when the news of the Michael Jackson passing happened, and I was just starting my career when Princess Di tragically was killed. Those were the only two that I can remember that had such an incredible global reach. But we didn't live really in the time of as intense social media as we do now, where you get the immediate impact of how much Kobe Bryant has touched everyone. I mean, far from just basketball, you scroll down any of your feeds and he has affected just about everyone. And I know you both touched on it, but my question to you is, how much bigger was Kobe Bryant than just the basketball accolades, which in and of itself are tremendously impressive?
Well, first of all, basketball-wise, on a world stage, he was as big as anyone. Because in Asia, he was arguably the biggest NBA player there. You know, so yep. Basketball-wise, I mean, his impact is second to none. And that includes Michael Jordan and LeBron James as far as worldwide prominence and being a face of the game. But, Nick kind of touched on it. A lot of athletes, even if they go on to do some really good things after their playing career, the best part, at least to the public, of their life was going to be their sports career. I'm not sure that was going to be the case with Kobe Bryant because he's only been retired, what, 3 or 4 years? 3 years?
3.5 years.
And he's already done so many tremendous things. And so what he was going to do, I mean, I don't know if he would have ever delved into politics or whatever. He obviously was intelligent enough, was well-respected enough to do things like that. But he was going to do some tremendous things off the court. And again, that is one of the things that makes it so tragic in my mind.
And I don't know if this makes it sadder or makes it, I don't know, more palatable, probably somewhere in between. When he was in the public, right in the public eye Saturday night, the night before, because the Lakers were in Philly and LeBron passed him in the scoring list. And so what you saw from Kobe with his tweet after the game, with Bill Plaschke in the LA Times wrote about today, was Kobe was truly at peace and was no longer engaging in the petty stuff that I find myself engaging in all the time of this player versus that player. He was so confident and satisfied with what he had accomplished in basketball that he had I don't want to say removed himself from the fray, but he was wanting now just to lift others up and to move on to other phases. So you're glad he got that piece, but it is for Kobe's family, for the families of the other people on that airplane or in that helicopter, for everyone, it is the type of thing, and this is not, I'm just going to be totally candid, these 3 hours today, it's just going to be, I don't know, soul searching. But it's the type of thing I'll talk with Broussard off the air about, in that Broussard is a man of deep, deep faith. To be totally candid, I am not so much. And it is the type of thing that makes you question either. Like, and that is the impact of something like this. You either say, like, how is this fair? Or this is where you grab someone's hand who has that type of faith and you say, this is how you get through these types of things. And God willing, I hope those his three other daughters and his wife have that support structure around them, because this is unbelievable.
Well, as you can imagine, the news has struck so many throughout the sports world as well. This from Shaquille O'Neal. There are no words to express the pain I'm going through now with this tragic and sad moment of losing my niece Gigi and my friends, my brother, my partner in winning championships, my dude, my homie. I love you and will miss you, will be missed. My condolences go out to the Bryant family and the families of the other passengers on board. I'm sick right now. He then added, Kobe was so much more than an athlete. He was a family man. That was what we had most in common. We love our families. Whenever we got together, I would hug his children like they were my own, and he would embrace my kids like they were his. His baby girl, Gianna, was born on the same day as my youngest daughter. I miss you already, brother. This is truly unbelievable. Everyone, please keep the Bryants in your prayers. Rest in peace. We are here at Loomis Park in Miami Beach, site of Super Bowl 54. It's a beautiful day. The sun is out. We couldn't be happier to be here, and we couldn't be happier to welcome in Saints star running back Alvin Kamara.
What up, man?
Good to see you, brother.
Saints jerseys, that's a little disrespectful to our guy.
It's all right.
The Panthers are also the Saints jerseys.
Still a lot of respect.
So, Alvin, you joined us in New York a month into your career. Yeah. I think you guys had a really early bye week that year. Yeah. You had already flashed. You already said, oh, this is at least for a better player as a rookie than I thought was going to be coming in the league as a mid-round pick. You're now 3 years in. You've made three Pro Bowls. You're a guy who has continued to show your dual threat as a back. What do you think's been the biggest key to your maturation as a player and to your success so early?
Man, I think just ending up in a great spot, you know, being in New Orleans, having Sean Payton, having Drew Brees, having, you know, Mark Ingram early in my career, and just older guys like Ted Ginn to, you know, kind of guide me and you know, help me make that transition from being a college player to a professional player. You know, that's been a tremendous help.
When you were with us, Adrian Peterson was on the team mm-hmm. briefly, and you talked about how you have one of the all-time greats in Peterson nearing the end, even though he's had a great time in Washington yeah. now. And you also talked about Ingram.
Yeah.
But Ingram, I feel like, didn't really get the national recognition till this year with the Lamar and the yeah. big trust, all that. But you gave us a little bit of a window into that. What type of teammate was he, and how much do you think some of your success now as you're approaching being a veteran came from learning from Mark?
Man, I mean, a lot of my success came from Mark. You know, right from the jump when I came in, you know, he welcomed me with open arms, made sure I knew everything that was going on, made sure he, you know, kept me in the loop with, you know, offensive schemes, like just had a move in the organization and just everything. You know, he told me to come to him if I ever needed anything, and it was true from day one to, you know, when he ended up leaving. So, you know, definitely appreciative of Mark. And, you know, I always tell him, like, he helped me a lot. You know, it's part of the reason why I was so successful was because of him.
We see so many players come out of the draft and they're high draft picks and they get thrown right into the fire sometimes on not so great teams. And yeah. there's a lot of pressure on them and they're forced to play well from day one. You were lucky to have Ingram there as well. Like you said, how important was it that you weren't, all the pressure wasn't just focused solely on you when you got there?
Man, that was a big help. You know, not only Mark, but I had Adrian also.
Yep, he was
there.
You
know, in the early part of my season. You know, both of them, they just told me to be me. You know, I think that was like one of the things when I first got there, I was kind of in my head like, oh man, I got to do this or do that. They're like, man, just calm down and play. Like, you fine. Like, you know, when your opportunity comes, you'll take advantage of it. They were just like, you know, if I have any questions, ask them and, you know, just play. Don't think, just play. So.
So I'm going to come from a different perspective because I get it going into a locker room, having that veteran leadership and those guys to kind of really rely on, if you will, to kind of guide you. But you were ready to play.
Yeah.
When your number was called, you were ready. What do you accredit that to? Was it your coaching? Was there a specific coach? The system in Tennessee? Like, what made you so ready when your number was called?
I think it was just what I experienced throughout my college career. You know, just having to transfer and having to, you know, be at the top, go back down and, you know, start over and grind back up and then, you know, transfer again and end up in Tennessee and, you know, having to prove myself again in Tennessee and, you know, ending up in New Orleans and, you know, just having that same mentality, like, I'm just going to keep my head down and grind and prove myself and, you know, whatever product ends up on that field, I know that's going to be the best product and I know it's going to put me in the best situation and be successful. So I think, you know, just being able to come in and work and not worry about anything else that's going on, I think that's what, you know, helped.
Before we talk about the game, I got two quarterback questions for you. Gotcha. First one, do you think Drew Brees is back next year?
Do I think Drew is back? I think Drew can play as long as he wants to. So, you know, I was just with him at Pro Bowl down in Orlando. Drew, if you're listening, I love you. If you want to come back, come on back. I think he'll be back, though.
Okay, the second part, let's just assume for a moment that Drew decides it's been an amazing career, won a championship, I have all the records, I'm going to retire. Do you guys have one, without Drew, one or two starting quarterbacks on the roster absent of Drew Brees?
I mean, we got two pretty good ones. We got Teddy Bridgewater, which, I mean, everybody saw what he did this year. And we got Taysom Hill. I think everybody sees what he does game in and game out. So, you know, it's just depending on what, you know, like how things shake out. Both of them are capable, I think.
How tough was it? I think a lot of people thought that this year's Saints team, the way you guys were playing, the path was carved out for you.
Yeah.
And then when you did win, as a fan, it's really hard to process how your team's not it anymore. But as a player, I'm sure you were hearing what people were saying. I'm sure you guys, you understood how well you were playing.
Yeah.
How hard and jarring is it to know when your season ends, knowing you had the tools in place and the right players to get all the way this year?
Man, it's tough. I mean, we've been there 3 years in a row. So, you know, it's hard when, you know, you're tasting it, especially this year. We kind of got, like you said, the path mapped out for us. You know, we feeling good. We're playing well at the right time. And, you know, it just didn't happen for us. But, you know, as a player, it's like you just got to compartmentalize it. You got to shake back and find a way to come back next year even better.
Talk about a little bit about the game you had against a team that is representing the NFC. In this Super Bowl, the 49ers, the game you guys had down in New Orleans was a phenomenal game. What did you see in this team that we may not have seen or that the Chiefs may need to prepare for in this game?
I mean, they're obviously a great team, great defense. Offense is explosive. I think they play with a lot of heart. They play together. That's like some of the intangible things that, you know, as a fan watching, you might not see. You're just looking for Jimmy G to throw a ball to Butler or, you know, Mostert to get a big run. But those guys play with heart and they play with good energy, you know. New Orleans is a hard place to play in, but they came in and, you know, they had a game plan and they stuck to it. And, I mean, the energy that they had it was phenomenal.
All right, I'm gonna drill down on this for a moment because full disclosure, I'm from Kansas City. Mm-hmm. I know I do this professionally, but I'm a Chiefs fan. Yeah. I want the Chiefs to win on Sunday.
Yeah.
The Niners are a great defense.
Mm-hmm.
You guys hung 46 on them. You guys, that was one of the best games of the season. What was the key to you guys unlocking something offensively against San Francisco that no one else this year really has been able to do? And maybe, and I'm sure Kansas City's watching that film trying to see it, what did you think it was? Why were you guys so successful offensively in that game?
I think we just came in and we had a plan and, you know, we knew what we wanted to do. We had a great week of practice and, you know, I think we
Well, what was the plan? What, you, tell it. Come on, you ain't playing again this year. What was the plan? Tell us the plan.
Okay. I mean, we knew they had a great defensive front. You know, we knew it was going to be hard to run the ball. We knew we had to get the ball out, try to work their edges, and, you know, just kind of take advantage of, you know, the things that they kind of lack in. And
okay. I'm not gonna, all right, that's enough. Know. I got it. Yeah, that works.
You got it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Alvin, when Drew Brees went down this year and Teddy Bridgewater stepped up, you didn't have to place as much pressure on Bridgewater. You all kind of gathered around. Everyone else sort of stepped up, and yeah. He was great, and mm-hmm. I don't think you lost under Bridgewater this year. Again. Now you look at a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo, where that team is great, and they have a ton of weapons around him, and not a lot is asked of Jimmy Garoppolo except to go out there and maybe not turn the ball over. Is he underrated as a quarterback when you watch him play?
I think, like you said, for that reason, I think he is, because he doesn't have to do a lot. You know, there's a lot of weapons around him. Raheem Mostert does a great job. Tevin Coleman, when he's healthy, he's doing what he has to do. I mean, they got a great receiving core. That, you know, they stretch the field and make plays. So, I mean, a lot of the time he's just dumping the ball down and guys are making plays, or, you know, the running backs are running, you know, getting great yards. They have a great rushing game. So I think Jimmy G's a little underrated, but, you know, we're going to see Super Bowl Sunday.
You are the first guest we've ever had who's brought their own deodorant to the set, which is interesting.
Yeah. You're and by the way,
new old.
What? Jenna. Afterwards.
What? Oh, please, Nick. Okay. New Old Spice Ultra Smooth Line.
Yeah.
Something else. Tell us about it, please.
Man, so Old Spice, you know, I might not be a low-key guy on the field, but off the field, I like low-key smooth scent. So it's ultra smooth line by Old Spice. I mean, it's great. You know, and we got right here, we got Clean Slate, which is the new antiperspirant. It's also it's dermatologist tested. So great, you know, thing to add to my toiletry bag. So I'm carrying that with me.
Perfect. Awesome, Alvin. Have a great week.
Congratulations.
Enjoy.
Yes, sir.
You deserve every bit of it.
Appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Good stuff.
Man. I love watching you play, man.
Thank you.
Congratulations on another great season.
TurboTax is here to help this tax season by making tax filing easier for you. They've made it their mission to give you all the tools and advice you need to get your taxes done with confidence, like making uploading your W-2 as easy as taking a picture. Just use your phone or tablet to simply snap a picture of your W-2, then watch your information appear in the right place in your tax return. You can be sure you're filing your taxes correctly while at the same time making sure you're getting the best possible refund. TurboTax, all people are tax people.
Back here at Loomis Park in Miami Beach for Super Bowl 54. It is beautiful. That is a real Ferris wheel. Nick and I are going to take a couple rolls. Do we take a couple rolls on that thing?
I don't know. I think rides is the word.
Rides.
And I also
rides. Yeah. Right. We're going to take some rides. We're going to take both of those things. We are here for Super Bowl 54.
Stephon Diggs. I've not seen the commercials. Your hand's sticky. Am I going to? What up?
Good to see you.
Good morning. How y'all doing? How you doing?
A lot of things going on right now. Yes, we are joined by Viking star wide receiver. Stephon, thanks so much for being with us this morning. It's a lot going on this week. I'm glad you're here with us. You want to start talking about the Super Bowl? Do you have a pick yet? Do you have a team that you, is it hard as a player to choose? Because I'm sure you're friends with some of the guys. So is that yes, you're not going to give us a pick?
I will give you a pick. It's a hard process because, of course, being a player, you want to play in it. But you can't say, woe is me, and just forget about it. So to pick, it's hard to pick a side right now. You know, anticipating great defense, great offense. I'm always going to pick great defense just because, you know, I've been a part of it. I played both teams.
Right.
And that was interesting enough to be on both sides of seeing how they work. So we'll wait for me to pick.
So you guys, obviously, you have the playoff win and then the Niners game. In the Niners game, you make that big play, and it's like, oh, maybe I know they're 13-3, but maybe they're a little rusty. You guys have played well the week before, and then the offense, with respect, kind of ground to a halt.
Yeah.
Was that, in your opinion, more about what you guys didn't do, or how great this Niners defense has been all year and continue to be in that game?
They've been consistently good, you know, throughout. Their D-line flies around, their linebackers fly around. They're playing with a lot of swag as well. You know, they're playing with that energy that you need as a defense. So more testament to them, because we try to do everything, you know, the game plan. We just tried our best, try to execute, but it didn't fall the way we wanted to. And when we tried to adjust, they still got a good D-line.
You had a phenomenal year. Let me just say that.
Oh, thanks, boss.
And it was more interesting and intriguing for me to watch you this year because your counterpart, Adam Thielen, goes down.
Yeah.
You step up and you're the focus of that offense in the passing game. What was your mentality? What was your approach, you know, being kind of a 1A guy, splitting that number one receiver with Adam Thielen? What was your approach this year?
Just far as how it all went down, of course, you'd hate to see a guy go down, especially a guy that you call your brother, your teammate, a guy that you grind with day in and day out. And for me, I would say my approach was the same. You know, I came into work the same way every day. Everybody knows me to work really, really hard in practice, a lot of energy. I'm very charismatic, so I bring that type of energy to the table every day. And in the game, I just try to come alive. You know, that's my favorite place to be at. So just doing my job.
Look, you never shy away from how you really feel about things. You're very open and honest with the media after games sometimes and on the sidelines. There were a couple times this season where we saw you get frustrated for whatever reason.
Yeah.
What caused some of that frustration for you this season?
I would say somewhat to the point of being the only one out there. You get a lot of cover two, or if I'm this 3x1 receiver on the backside and they go cloud, I'm out of the play. I don't have many routes I can run. So as far as like consistently being doubled or cover two, or however you dress it up, it's not a fun place to be in, you know, especially when you're only receiver out there and you got some young guys that can play, you got great tight ends and you got to get them involved as well. But to be in my position, it's not always the most fun.
And listen, you know this, that I'm a huge fan of yours, but
yes, sir,
to be fair, because you're here now, so I have to say what I said a month ago, I was critical of you in the Saints game, the game you guys won. Because you guys are winning, and it seemed like your emotions boiled over a bit. But I had someone real smart say to me, I don't think you understand, and Greg can attest to this as well, the dependency of the receiver position, how it's one of the few spots in sports where you can do everything right and still not necessarily dictate anything if you don't get the ball. So it kind of made me want to kind of pull back some of the criticism. But I am curious for you in that spot, how helpless is a word you never want to use with pro athletes, but to a degree, how helpless you feel because it's not just about you doing your job in order to help your team.
Yeah, I'm kind of like replay that situation. We're up 13-10. It wasn't a blowout. It wasn't 21-0. The score is 13-10. I get frustrated because you want to do well. You want perfection all the time. And people expect perfection from you. So as you want that for your teammates and you want that for the guys around you, you expect nothing less. And your coaches don't expect nothing less from you. So my approach to the game is, you know, you want to do everything right. And even when I do everything right, it's not going to always happen the way you want to. So being frustrated is just going to be a part of the game for me. As a player, you wear your heart on your sleeve. You wear your emotions on the sleeve. And for me, I'm going to always push my guys to be, you know, the best they can be. Later on in that game, or not even later on, like, I mean, a minute later, they have another video of me going to my quarterback telling them, you don't have to force the ball to me, you know, because that's the kind of player I am. You know, I've always been that way. I want to win, and I want to win at a high level. So regardless of how I get frustrated and how I deal with it, I still want to win.
And that's why I didn't have a problem with it, because I've watched you over your career do that over and over again, time in and time out, be frustrated as a receiver, understanding how dependent you are.
Exactly.
But then also knowing, I'm that guy. You gotta have that belief of I'm that guy. Just give me an opportunity, put me in positions to where I can be successful.
Exactly.
In this game, two really good play callers. You had a good play caller. You lost your play caller. Yeah. Like, how does that change things with you guys moving forward? You talked about getting cloud coverage, cover two, and all those things, moving yourself around. What would you like to see in a play caller?
Well, we have a great guy. Coach Kubiak, he's well respected. He's well known in this league, and you know we love him. We appreciate him. He's always played like the back scene this past year, but he's always been like a key part in our offense. So for us, we have a lot of respect for him and what he likes to do. So for me, just approaching it how I always approach it. You know, he's not necessarily new, but we did build a relationship over this past season. So kind of looking forward to see where we go from there. You know, and we trust him. You know, also hats off to Stefanski. You know, he did a great job for us moving on. So. Congratulations.
How do you think Odell and Jarvis are gonna do with him?
I think they'll like him. You know, from my specific point of view, he brings structure, organization. You know, the way he talks to us is more of a player to coach, but respectfully, and he understands guys that want to win. He loves that fire, and he says he don't mind what you do, long as you play ball. So.
We had a lot of questions about Kirk Cousins coming into this season. I think Kirk Cousins had a lot of questions about Kirk Cousins coming into this
season.
That's what
they say.
That's what they say. Could he play on the big stage? Could he play in the big game? Could he play when the pressure is at its highest? He had a great year. I think he answered a lot of those questions with a couple of big games as he got to the end of the season and then into the postseason. Is there anything that changed? Was there something that was different in him this season that you saw, or the way he approached the games? What was it about Kirk coming into this season? Because I think he did prove to a lot of people that maybe that monkey's off his back.
Just as far as like getting more comfortable, I would say, just as far as like being a quarterback, I don't know what it's like to be a quarterback, but I assume that it's pretty hard. And you know, you have a lot that's on your shoulders as far as like with his pass and whatever all the outsiders say about him. But for him, as far as his approach has been the same, you know, as far as like how he addresses football, how he addresses us, how he leads our offense, and how he leads our team. So I wouldn't say nothing clicked. I would say we ran the ball really efficiently, ran the ball extremely well.
Yeah.
You know, shout out to Dalvin Cook. He can hold the load and really do his job. So as far as like opening up everything else to play action, you know, kind of taking the pressure off of him doing X, Y, Z, he just did what he could, and you know, it worked out well for him.
I've got one more question for you. But before that, I want the audience to know something, and I hope it doesn't embarrass you.
Not at all.
I saw the emotion in your eyes a couple minutes ago when you were talking about, and you guys won that play, and when you were talking about, I could see you almost holding back some of the emotion.
Yeah.
And I think it gave me, at least sitting a foot from you, a window into how competitive you like really reading it right.
Yes, sir.
I'm not making that up. And that leads me to, you know, the tragedy from this weekend. And you tweeted and you talked about Kobe.
Oh,
and that competitive, Nate, is what he will be remembered for amongst all the things. It's just fierce competitor. We've seen a lot of athletes, not just basketball players, talk about that he inspired them.
Yeah.
Why did he inspire you so much?
Oh, man. I grew up a Laker fan. My dad liked the Lakers, and we always used to watch it on the big screen. And he like never let you down. Like Kobe was like a killer. Like when there was an opportunity there, he was going in. When there was blood in the water, he was going in. And you knew every time he was gonna hit the shot. You know, and to kind of hear when I was younger, just to love a player and to grow up, and you kind of get the background of him waking up at 4 a.m. or 3 a.m. to work out, and him putting a lot of effort and consistency into his game, it motivates you and inspires you still. Like right now, at such a tragic time, you think to yourself that he wouldn't want you to be sad. He would want you to be happy, you know, and kind of continue to push, continue to grow as people, as men, you know, and as an athlete and as a competitor. I love Kobe. Like, I was a Kobe guy. I argue down, you know, as far as like the best to worst or however you want to dress it. So it was tough for everybody, you know. And as a kid, you know, when you grow up on somebody and you lose them, I never had nothing like that, you know. And I haven't felt that way about losing somebody since my dad. So to lose Kobe and lose somebody that we love so much, it was definitely a hard time. And it's kind of sad, I'm kind of shaking a little bit, but
I think what we hear from you and is what we're seeing is that Kobe Bryant had an impact on people, not just in basketball, across sports, people outside of sports as well. And you can hear it in your voice, how much of an impact he had on you as well. And I appreciate you sharing that us. No,
yeah,
not at all.
We appreciate it.
We do want to take a little turn, though, and talk about why you're here with the Genesis, the official luxury vehicle of the NFL. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, right now, let me draw my emotions out of the way. Love that. But like you said, the official luxury vehicle of the NFL. They hooked me up with a G90 this week to get chauffeured around in. I've never been chauffeured around, you know, but what a better car to be in. It's nice, it's luxury. It's young and luxury, so it kind of fits me. And they're unveiling something pretty big tonight, so stay tuned.
There you go. Young and luxury, wearing the Dior jacket with the Prada shoes.
Yes.
Come on. Hiding the diamond chain.
Is the car spacious?
Yes. I'll give you a ride one day. I'll see what I can do.
You know what I mean?
There
awesome.
You go.
Shotgun. Quickly, you promised us. Give us a pick.
All right, look, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I enjoyed my time up here, so I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
Kansas City has all the swag, you know. They got a high potent offense, amazing Patrick Mahomes. But I was told by a little birdie that defense wins Super Bowls.
Okay.
So I'm gonna go with San Fran.
Oh.
And I like KC, right. But I'm gonna go with San Fran. I play both teams.
You okay? You still like them?
No, of course.
Is your heart okay? No.
Hey, thank you.
Stephon.
For the transparency.
No doubt. Absolutely.
That's great.
Good morning.
That's great, man. Congrats to you.
And a big congratulations on everything you've done this season and continued success throughout. Entertainment both on and off the field. Jags quarterback Gardner Minshew is with us. Gardner, thanks so much for hanging out with us. I'm just going to take over for a
second.
I've been a huge fan. I just wrote down a quick list of all the things that you and I have in common. We both wear headbands. I do sometimes. You're wearing shorts right now. The audience can't see, but my God, you showed up as perfectly as I wish I could. We have the same hair length, which people don't realize. You rode in a fighter jet. I was with the Blue Angels. Yeah.
You were in the Thunderbirds. By the way, can we start there?
Yeah.
She says that's hard. You just sit there.
No.
I almost vomited on myself.
I passed out.
16 times.
You passed out?
I passed out. I call myself a pro athlete, and I passed out. That was too much for me.
Thank you. Thank you, Gardner.
G-forces, man. It's like nine times your body weight on you. It's not.
Would you do it again?
It's not a joke.
No, I did it once.
But would you do it again?
No, that's what I'm saying. I've gotten my fill. You know, it took a toll.
By the way, I feel like we have a few people that came here just for you. We got a couple Washington State
Cougars.
It looks like. And right here, can we get my man right here? Can you grade it? Can you stand up? Do you mind? I'm sorry to put you on national television. You didn't ask me. Can you grade his mustache?
Oh, man, you got to take this down a little bit. But other than that, yeah, you're off to a good start for sure.
You
off
like it?
He's off to a great start. No doubt.
The point is, you just had so much fun this season. You had so much fun on the field, but you had so much fun off. And I think that's what
you
really
appreciated. The point is about the mustache. I want to know more about the mustache.
Wait a second. Could you grade Nick's mustache?
No.
Well, it's hiding, like just like mine. It's hiding right now. It's not a mustache unless it's standalone.
Oh, that's a good
point. Hold on, you guys, come on. We know what we need to talk about right now. You had a great year. You won Johnny Unitas Award. Everyone should have known you could have had a great year. We can do that later. So, about the important things. 3 years ago, you shaved your mustache, and you're like, "I'm going to be a super famous guy one day, so I'm going to put it in a Ziploc bag and hold on to it." So, like, what made you keep your shaved mustache 3 years ago, Gardner?
Yeah.
Answer the question.
That one is probably a little more personal to me. I think it's because I loved it so much, and I didn't want to see it go.
Why'd you shave it then?
Huh? It needed to go at that point. It wasn't ready. It wasn't ready, you know, so I needed to shave it. I shaved into a bag and saved it.
You're not going to get the $1 million, okay? I'm not saying you're not, but let's just assume you're not. What's the least amount of money you would accept for that? What's the buy it now price?
Yeah, I mean, we're getting these seven-figure offers coming in right now. So
as expected.
I'm not talking about, you know, anything less.
Okay.
So right. I know what I have.
Okay. How's the RV tour going?
Oh, it was awesome, man. So it's done now. Went all the way out, saw
the
West Coast, came all the way back. Yeah. No, it was went all the way out and back in about 2 weeks. So it was
quick.
What's
the hardest thing about living life in an RV that maybe was unexpected for you?
So we made a rule. It was me and a few of my buddies. We made a rule. The first person to use the bathroom would have to empty it out. So we just ended up not using the bathroom the whole time. So that was pretty inconvenient.
Just pull it over.
We showered at a few Planet Fitnesses. That was good.
Ate at a couple of gas stations in Kansas City, I'm sure, Nick.
Yeah, dude, definitely at the
gas. What was your favorite stop?
Either Vegas or Telluride, Colorado.
Very different
for
places.
Very different reasons, but both were really good time. Met a lot of good people.
What's it like being newly famous Gardner Minshew when you stop by in Vegas?
Oh, I got a beard now. Like, nobody knows who I am. Like, you know, if they see the stash, it's like, oh, who's that other guy with the stash? Oh, that's him. But, you know, I don't have a stash now, so. Now I'm just like your average, like, extremely handsome guy just walking around.
See, I've been trying to tell Nick that all season long. He said, tell him if you ever see him in person.
Jenna is, like, legitimately, you'll talk to a lot of people the Super Bowl week and they'll tell you, like I did, how impressed they were with you and root for you. And it's all true to a degree. Usually it's kind of just buttering people up. You were Jenna's favorite player in the league this year. You had a bit of like a cult following. When did you feel that coming?
I don't know, like, if y'all would have been in Pullman, Washington last year, like, you'd have seen, it was kind of the same thing, just on a, like, smaller scale. So I guess I got ready for it in a town of about 30,000, and then, you know, came to the NFL, and obviously, kind of everybody knows the NFL.
Were there things that you tried that worked and things that you tried that didn't? What am I talking about? I'm talking about the jorts, the short jean shorts. I saw you broke those out for a little while, then they went away. That would probably be my only knock on the aura of Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, like, I mean, it gets cold. I mean, you can't wear jorts when it's cold.
Can't wear jorts when it's cold.
Can't put the legs out when it's like that. I get a little ashy when it's cold, too. So, you know, I think it's more of a summertime thing.
Coach, follow up after the jean shorts for me.
Well, I know with my experience with jorts, it's a little bit, it does get a little bit
chilly.
Inconvenient and chilly at times. So I kind of move away from like early fall.
But so you get it.
I do. And being another extremely handsome person walking around.
He gets it.
That people don't know. Like I appreciate the struggle that you're going through.
That's right.
Now. Who's your funniest teammate?
Funniest teammate. Josh Allen's probably the funniest looking. I don't know. Marcel Darius is pretty hilarious. So. It's funny, God.
What was this year like on a semi-serious note? You can say whatever you want, but what was it like? You're backing up Nick Foles, first game of the year. He's on a beautiful pass, by the way.
Yeah.
Touchdown pass against the Chiefs. Breaks his collarbone. You're thrown into the fire. By week three, you're leading a comeback that falls, I think, 1 point short of 2-point conversion. Like, you are instantly in it. What was the whole year like for you?
Yeah, it was crazy, you know, coming in. Like, I didn't even get a place there until after preseason because I didn't know if, like, I was making the team, if they were doing, you know, whatever. So, you know, getting in, and then the first game, Nick goes down, and I'm crushed. I'm like, dude, Nick, that's my guy. Then I'm like, oh, wait, that means I'm going
You're
in.
Like, wait a minute, now I'm the guy. I'm the guy.
So it was crazy. Had a lot of great people around me to help me. You know, guys on the offense, coaches. To get me ready for that.
There's always this idea of, well, if I ever get the chance, I'm going to do the following four things, or if I was in there, I'd be able to do it this way. When it was finally you, and there wasn't a big buildup because it was so unexpected, what was it like? What was the quick learning curve, and what did you look back on and say, oh, God, that was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be?
Yeah, I mean, the first few games, I was just going in there. I knew I had to say the play super clearly in the huddle, because if not, Linder was going to rip me. So I had to be super clear for him, and then after that, I was like, okay, we're good now. I have to just call him the play. That was the biggest part.
Leonard, what do you mean Leonard?
Brandon Linder, my center.
Okay, Linder.
He was kind of mean to me, man, but I needed that tough love to get me.
What was he doing?
Little quarterback hazing?
What was he doing?
Yeah, no, just anytime, like, he just gives you this stare, you know, and just right into your soul, you know, tells you better get your crap right. Basically this season was trying to not let those guys down, you know. You got these older guys that are putting so much into it. I'm not going to be the one to mess that up.
Who was the best rookie quarterback in the 2019 season?
I don't know, man.
Maybe if I ask it, he'll answer differently. Who was the best rookie quarterback in 2019 season?
No, that's what, like, I made that mistake of, like, trying to compare. And that's not what I want to be. I want to be the best quarterback I can be for the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, Kyler Murray didn't play for the Jaguars. Daniel Jones didn't play for the Jaguars. I play for the Jaguars, and that's all, you know, I can really concern
myself. What do you think of that,
Coach?
Coach
so happy.
I think that's a great answer. Right? And I think that's the answer that's going to be that's going to serve you well.
I wish I'd have been more humble in that situation.
That was a world of hurt, wasn't it, when you started comparing yourself like that?
Yeah, and that's what I was. That just let my ego talk, and taking a step back from that, I was able to say, you know, I'm wrong, and I need to fix on myself.
Follow up though. Who's the best looking rookie quarterback this past year?
I think rookie or otherwise, it has to be the guy in Jacksonville. I think it's consensus, right?
I mean, I think you
have a
from Jenna, who's the best looking quarterback?
Probably the guy from Jacksonville.
Yeah,
really? Your old friend Jimmy Garoppolo's going to be a little angry at you right now.
Hey, Jimmy Garoppolo's not sitting next to me right now.
See?
That's a good point.
Woman of the moment. But you had a fun season?
Yeah, it was a blast.
You
couldn't
enjoyed
have asked
it?
For anything better.
Of course, it was probably so unexpected and probably just everything you wanted, but it came a lot sooner. So,
absolutely.
So after the RV trip and all the different things in the offseason, how is this preparation going into next year going to be different for you?
Yeah, so I got a whole nother offense I need to learn. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to working with Coach Gruden. That's going to be a great experience. But I'm about to be down starting Monday and down in Naples. I won't leave there. I'll be training for 2.5 months, getting ready, busting my tail to get ready to go.
Can I, just real quick before we move on, I think it was unexpected, and Jenna mentioned it, for a lot of us. But once you came onto the scene, my mistake for not watching enough Pac-12 football, I guess, I was like, man, you were unbelievable at Washington State. You had transferred. Your story is a little different. Was it as unexpected for you as it maybe was for the rest of us that you were able to do it at the level you were at immediately?
I don't know. All I ever said was just I need a chance. You know, I didn't ask to be a first-round pick. I didn't ask to be thrown into a starting role. I just asked for a chance. And I knew, you know, first thing I had to do, I had to get on the team. And if I was on the team, I'd get a chance. And, you know, it came sooner than I expected. You know, sooner than any of us would have wanted. But I'm sure grateful for it, and I wanted to do the best with it.
Well, the Jaguars gave you a chance, and shortly thereafter, Snickers gave you a chance, chance. You're here with Snickers. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing here.
Yeah, so I got voted the Snickers Hungriest Player of the Year. Shout out to everybody that voted. That was really cool, y'all. And I actually got
something
this.
Something comes with that.
Yeah, I got this chain right here.
Yeah. That is, by the way,
a legit Snickers chain.
When this voting was going on, we saw this. This is, yeah. No, put it on, man.
Put it
it's
on,
like,
yeah.
It's like a 4-pound chain.
See, then,
oh,
my
oh,
head's
your
too big.
Hair is
my
too luxurious.
Too big. Yeah.
Never mind, sorry.
Feathered and lethal. Yeah, so this chain, they're going to auction off next year. The proceeds will go to Movember Cause, which I was pretty closely tied to, just focusing on men's health, mental health. Cancer awareness, really good calls.
Can the person who wins the bidding on the chain get the mustache too? You throw it in?
Dude, if they could afford it, yeah. I mean, but that's a whole nother thing, you know.
Great job, man.
Gardner Minshew, you're so fun. Thank you so much. Enjoy your week down here.
Appreciate that.
Have a great time.
James
Jarvis Landry joining us this morning. Thank you for coming on. I'm going to move over.
How are you doing, Jarvis? Good to see you.
Bless. My guy.
Do we need to make introductions, Nick? He probably knows everybody.
Well, we're good.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Come hang out, spend a little time with us. But we're going to get to all things Browns and football. But first, I want to start with why you're here, the MSC's Cruise Super Coral Play campaign. Tell us a little bit about that.
Just something that we partner with to help raise awareness about Super Coral and, you know, what it means and what it means to our kids, our kids' future, to us, to the environment.
So for you, you're here. You got a lot going on. You guys just finished the season. I know it was not team-wise level success you expected. Well, if you had to drill it down to one thing, where and why do you think it went the way it did?
You know, just communication. You know, I think a lot of it was just communication, being on the same page. You know, whether it's from the standpoint of, you know, quarterback to receiver or coach to players, you know, we just didn't have a great sense of communication.
Okay, you know what? I'm just going to be honest. Your microphone pack fell off, so I'm just going to stick it behind you there, not to be awkward at all. I want to make sure I can still hear you. I can see that cutting out.
Jarvis, I wanted to ask you, you know, everything is new for you right now, but Coach Kevin Stefanski coming in, have you had a chance to talk with him and see, you know, what this new offense is going to look like and what your role is going to be?
Yeah, I've talked to him briefly, you know, and a lot of our talks has just kind of been from the standpoint of let's just get ready to work, you know, get guys back healthy and get ready to work. No really plan about, you know, who's going to be calling the plays or what the system is going to totally look like.
Right.
But, you know, Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, and Delvin Cook, you know, they found a way to survive and coexist.
Right.
So, you know, I'm excited to see what we can do.
I know Odell just got out of surgery. Have you spoken to him?
Yeah, I have.
How's he doing?
He's doing great. He's recovering. He's healthy, so he's getting healthy. So,
how much, just real quick, you mentioned the getting healthy. And at the end of the year, we have the ability to look at how many games were lost due to injury. Like, is this starting player missed 8 games? What we don't always have the ability to do is how many guys were playing injured throughout the year? How many guys got banged or got nicked up? Football players, so you don't talk about it.
Right.
And I do wonder for you guys how frustrating or how tough that is to know, well, we might be out there, but we're not 100%, but we're evaluated as if we are.
Yeah. It's very tough, you know, and in the league, you know, it's 100% rate, you know. At some point throughout the season, you're going to get hurt. And the tough part, you know, for myself, for Odell and a lot of guys around the league, you know, when you go into the season hurt, you don't have that same confidence. You don't have the same, you know, ability, even though it looks like it, even though you can show a flash here and there, it's the consistent basis of trying to do that. And that was tough for myself, for him, and, you know, for other guys around the league, but we found a way to push through it.
I want to focus on something else because a lot of people, I've been in the locker room with you, your second year in the league. I know the passion you play this game with, and I know how much you just want to compete and win. Talk about that. How misunderstood are receivers like yourself, like your brother, OBJ, when all it is I just want to win? When you're showing that passion, that drive, that enthusiasm, all that work, people don't see all of that. They see kind of what we consider to be, or we classify as antics. Talk to that.
I mean, it's really that, you know, I've just always grown up to be the type of competitor that I felt like if the ball was in my hands or I had an opportunity to make a play, the chances of us winning increases, you know, and when you got guys around you that feel the same way, you know, you tend to see that a lot. And, you know, no offense, but, you know, everyone on the other side kind of sees it as being a prima donna or sees it as being selfish or, you know, not a team player. But in essence, it's all really about winning. You know, there's drives in games where, you know, three or four possessions go by and the ball hasn't touched one of our hands. You know, at that point it's, you know, okay, how do we get involved? How do we talk to coach? How do we communicate that, you know, we can help?
Do you think Baker Mayfield took some unfair criticism this season? A lot of people towards the end of your season were pointing fingers. This is why, whether it was the coaching or a lot of it was on the quarterback. Did he take some unfair criticism?
Yeah, I'm sure, but I'm sure he'll be the first to tell you too, you know, he didn't really play his best this year. You know, obviously coming into his second year and still really learning the new system, but trying to make the transition from last year, you know, and we had to do a better job as receivers, you know, making plays out there. I know I was in a lot of situations this year where I could have made a play or knocked the ball down and stopped it from getting intercepted, and I didn't, so... you know, it's things that we could have done on our end to help out.
But why do you think for Baker it went the way it did? Because he was so sensational his rookie season. You guys add Odell. What do you think was the biggest reason that instead of taking a leap in year two, he regressed a bit, now has to look to that leap in year three?
Again, you know, I say the first thing I said, you know, it comes down to communication, you know.
What does that mean?
Just from the standpoint of, you know, installing the offense, making sure that the details are there, you know, as these two guys kind of tell you, being a quarterback and a receiver, you know, you have to be on the same page, even if it's body language, even if it's eye contact. Those little things are very important.
What are the things that you're going to work on personally this offseason to make yourself better and to assure that Baker has a better chance at, you know, being productive within the offense with you, OBJ, and the rest of the receivers?
First starts with getting healthy. It starts with getting healthy, and from there, spending as much time with each other as possible. You know, learning a new system, learning what we're trying to do, what we're trying to accomplish. I think that's the biggest thing, trying to figure out our identity.
Spending time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Who's the best LSU wide receiver duo ever?
Man, I tell you what, those boys had a hell of a year, man.
They Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase were pretty damn special.
They were special. You cannot take any, and he took the national championship home with him. So.
Yeah, they did. All right,
but let me follow up. If you and Odell, with no disrespect to your guys' quarterback, if you guys had the number one pick of the draft, Joe Burrow, and an offense where you're going to throw the ball 60 touchdowns, right, what would you guys have looked like?
We would look damn good. But you know, in our system at that time, you know, we had five or six running backs. You know, we wasn't really built on throwing the ball. We just some kind of way found two
heavy
receivers.
Run.
Yeah.
I will say this really quick. People become enamored with Odell Beckham and all the catches that he made. We don't understand, and most people haven't had the opportunity to really see you work. Because you were down here for a majority of your season with your career with Miami, losing season, not really every on TV and televised. Your ability to catch the ball, I will say this in front of everyone.
As a receiver,
is one of the best I've ever seen. Like,
Look at his hands.
I've never seen, I'm paying attention.
Look
to
at his hands.
Hands.
People don't understand. This man practices catching the ball one-handed, just ridiculous stuff. Some of the things that happens in practice. Man, keep working, keep grinding. I've always loved the way you went about business and keep that passion. I've told you that. You stood in front of the team one time and said, this is all you got. And you see it every time you're on that football field. I love it.
Yes, sir. Yes,
keep
sir.
It. Best of the best.
For it, you, go ahead, Jenna.
Is it hard as a player down here when your friends, or you probably know a lot of the guys that are playing on both teams, to have a rooting interest or in one or the other if you never played for them?
Yeah, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. You know, I mean, Tyrann Mathieu is one of the guys that, you know, I love to death. You know, a lot of my style, a lot of the attitude about the game and the competitiveness has come from him, just watching him play and competing against him at LSU. And then you go to the other side, you know, you got guys like Sherman, Godwin, you know, those guys that, you know, I grew up watching and seeing, you know, Sherman lock guys down, and now I'm across from Sherman, running routes against Sherman, and, you know, it's going to be a hell of a game.
So that being said, do you have a pick for us?
I really like San Francisco's defense.
It's so hard.
It's a tricky question.
We got 10 seconds. Give us a pick. Come on.
No pressure.
Man.
Here we go.
I don't know, my LSU boy, man, the Honey Badger. I got to see him.
My God. Good luck this year, Jarvis.
Thank you.
Jarvis Landry, thank you so much.
See you guys.
That's it for us, everyone. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.